On the Pilot TV podcast this week, we are taking flight with Idris Elba in Hijack on Apple TV+, solving crimes on the Croisette with Can Confidential on Acorn, plus we're rap battling with Champion on BBC One, and creator Candice Carty-Williams joins us on the show a little later to talk all about it. But that's not all, because as you know, I'm slightly obsessed with Star Trek Strange New World, so I beamed Anson Mount directly into this podcast to chat to me all about that. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to the Pilot TV podcast, your essential guide to every show that matters, and a podcast that spent most of the past week in a perpetual queue for Taylor Swift tickets after the UK arm of her Eras Tour was announced on Tuesday. Very exciting. Also with me in said virtual queue are my two Swifty co-hosts. First up, Pilot TV's original anti-hero, it's Boyd Hilton, brackets Taylor's version.
Your obsession with Taylor Swift is absolutely fascinating.
It's bonkers. Yeah.
It's really weird.
It's excellent.
You have no knowledge of popular culture in general, but suddenly you hone in on the Swift.
That's it. That's it. I've picked this particular one. And I knew she was trouble when she walked in. It's Kay Ribeiro.
Hello.
Guys, did you manage to register for tickets? Have you got yours in hand? Are they in the bag? Are they, you know, sorted?
James, I think I've told you this before, and I hate to say it because you're such a super fan, but I actually do not like Taylor Swift.
Okay, we can't be friends anymore.
Hate her.
I know. I don't hate her, but I've got loads of friends who are fans, and I just don't get it, but yeah. I'm sure you can tell me off-mic.
I will. Do you know what? We'll do a special on Pilot Plus where I'll just spend an hour explaining to you why Taylor Swift is awesome with, you know, PowerPoint notes and whatnot.
Maybe.
So we've got some very quick housekeeping to get out of the way first. First piece of housekeeping, Kay is ill and not feeling well and yet has braved this podcast despite being ill. So let's just be honest. Her tolerance for me will be even lower than usual. So I'm going to have to be on my best behaviour this morning.
Yeah, be nice to me, James, please.
Yes.
Heroic.
Second of all, Boydie has a hard out because we've started late and he has an interview to do. And frankly, one of the interviews for this particular podcast. So we're going to have to keep this to a very tight episode.
And the other revelation, which you're not saying, is that you kept us waiting because you got the plum around.
I was hoping to gloss over that. So we're recording remotely. Yeah. We're recording remotely this week due to the illness issues. And it's true, not a euphemism. I had a plum around this morning.
He said, yeah, James, you've had your own waterworks issue, so it's all
yes,
good.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. Had to have my my boiler serviced, if you know what I mean. Yes, I literally...
Don't make that a Rudy thing.
Literally had my boiler serviced. That's exactly what happened. Not a euphemism. That's actually what happened. So that's why we're going to be going through this even quicker than usual. The other things are, remember, this is one of your last chances to get Pilot Plus at the lower price. If you were thinking of subscribing, and why wouldn't you? For it is excellent. And you'll find out why a little bit later on. Do sign up now for a whole year and you can lock in the lower price of $1.99 a month and you get a month free. So pretty good that. EmpireOnline.com/PilotTV or empire.supportingcast.fm and then press the little Pilot TV button. Either one is fine. If you're already a subscriber and don't pay annually but want to keep the price low, now is a good time to lock that in. And if you are already a subscriber, I should take this opportunity to say a big thank you. It is massively appreciated, all of you who do subscribe to Pilot Plus. It is, well, frankly, the thing that allows us to keep doing this podcast. So again, thank you very much for that. And if you are on the fence, if you're thinking about joining us, the Silo spoiler special will be going up this week, probably on Friday, if not Saturday, just after the final episode airs. So that's very exciting for Silo fans as well. And also, don't forget, we have our live show on the 19th of April, Pilot 250. It's going to be brilliant. There are going to be... What did I say?
April.
April?
Yeah.
Okay. Crucially, it does not happen in the past. It does not happen in the past. It is not in April. That was a very weird, belated April Fool's joke. It is the 19th of August... August, 19th of August this year. It will be on a Saturday night. What better way to spend a Saturday night than with me, than with Boydie, than with Kay, so she can shout at you. It's going to be great. There are going to be baked goods. We're going to make literal, actual cakes, which you might get to eat, or might not, depending on health and safety. But anyway, book now, kingsplace.co.uk/pilot250. Book immediately, book this very second. And that's it. Oh, the other thing I did want to say, while we're on the topic of baked goods, is that one of our listeners, Cray Bakes, had volunteered to send us some baked goods to make up for Boydie's egregious lack of Boydie Blondies, which we had been promised and never received. And we got them. And they were really, really nice.
Delicious. Like,
they were exciting. Kay, you weren't in yesterday.
I had some, though.
You
I had a super tasty, the biscotti one. Yeah. It was lovely and totally unconnected to my illness.
The speculoos. Well, yes, it's true. The blondies did not poison Kay. This is crucial. She was ill beforehand. But yes, it was one with a hippo on it, which I think was sort of kinder related. I very much enjoyed the sort of like, it was like a Bakewell-y one with sort of jammy almondy raspberry stuff in it. That was very, very nice. And there was a millionaires thing in there as well, which we scoffed. Well, when you went here yesterday.
People were very jealous, actually, when we opened them up. I saw people eyeing them up. We were like, no, just for us.
But also, we should point out that Craig, the chief whisk of Cray Bakes, has volunteered to judge the Great Pilot TV Bake Off at the live show on the 19th of August.
I feel very nervous about this suddenly. I was nervous anyway about baking because, as you know, I'm a Bake Off
Fairweather baker.
Yeah, no, I've only done it once, right? A cake, crucially buoyed. I have used the oven before.
That's not how virginity works, but carry on.
Yes, fair enough. Now, having an actual proper baker judge us.
Yeah.
I mean, this is more terrifying than Paul Hollywood.
It is. It's going to be exactly like that. He's going to be, it's a little bit claggy, boy, a little bit claggy. It's like, okay, you know, didn't whisk it properly.
It's going to be a blind bake, right? So he's not going to know. We've got to put them on plates.
Yeah. Oh, hang on. We're shifting the rules already. We haven't even done this. We're shifting the rules. So, is that how it's done in Bake Off?
Well, that's one of the rounds. This is more the equivalent of a round where they do. Because the blind bake, they're baking the same thing, aren't they, on Bake Off?
Whereas we're doing different things.
Yeah. I don't think they have to be blind, unless you think they have an inherent bias.
Yeah. I think we should do a mashup of the Bake Off rules, and I think we should bake it, different things, and then they should be put on plates with an ABC, and he judges them like that. Because he might have a bias.
I mean, obviously I will win if he knows that it's my cake, clearly. So.
Exactly.
If he's going to have any bias, my guess is he's have a bias against annoying, bald, middle-aged guys. So
Kay will win, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I don't think you should worry about that.
That is the hope.
We will see. Well, Craig, prepare yourself. I hope Craig's bought his ticket, otherwise we're going to have a problem. So,
I mean, if the poor guy's going to have to judge our baking, you could give him a complimentary ticket.
I feel we're paying him in cake. Like he's getting our baked goods.
James, you type bastard.
You can't pay for that kind of opportunity to have us bake for him.
No. Craig, for the record, Boyd and I both want you to have a free ticket. Yeah. James is staunchly against it. And therefore, you should give us more points when
you
start judging the
cake. I'll pay for the free ticket. If you want to be that tight-fisted, James.
Oh, Boydo.
In these times of the cost of living crisis and high interest rates,
right,
and the Pilot TV Plus subscription going up a bit, which
that's
is
true.
Fair enough.
That's inflation,
that's 8%. That's the least unfair of all of these price rises, to be fair. I am willing to pay myself for Craig to judge. Come along.
Gosh, Boydy, do you know what, Boyd? What a man.
Yes, Kay? Thank you. Yeah. I mean, that's just how it rolls, isn't it, when you've got our fascist leader in charge?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Well, let's move on from fascism to what we've been watching and what indeed have we been watching this week.
So I've been watching There She Goes, which Boyd has already talked about, because I think you hosted the event, didn't you, with David Tennant and Jessica Hines. And I finally caught up in it because I've seen the previous two series, and I just have to echo Boyd and just say it is incredible. It's so good. And I just think particularly Miley Locke, who plays Rosie, who isn't learning disabled that's what I find so astonishing. She gives such a convincing performance. All of them do. They're all great, fantastic actors. But yeah, I'm just kind of really bowled over by Miley. So I've been watching that and getting very emotional at that. And then the other side of the spectrum, I've been watching And Just Like That.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So I've watched three episodes, and what I would say is I'm now watching out of loyalty and nostalgia for the show, but I do think the new characters of Seema, played by what's her name, Sarita Chowdhury, she is the best thing about the whole show, because there are some other elements, particularly the character of Che, who I took against in the first season anyway because I didn't think she's funny and she's going to be
a
stand-up comic
radio host podcast person.
Yeah,
the one from Grey's
she's
Anatomy.
James. She's meant to be funny. She's meant to be a comic, yet nothing that comes out of her mouth ever makes me laugh.
I only watched one episode, but I very strongly felt that to be the case, yes.
Yeah. So,
is she the one who sees Tony Danza in the episode that I watched last night?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. He plays her dad.
Right.
So, yeah, it's not great, if I'm honest, but I will stick with it just because, you know. And I want to see Kim Cattrall's return.
I watched it last night. I watched the first couple of episodes, and it's an interesting one. It's still kind of pleasurable to be in the company of the core four, isn't it? I mean, the three minus Kim Cattrall. They're still really good. But yeah, it is the supporting, the new supporting characters. The one you like, is she the one who went into the hairdresser and then got annoyed with him? Yeah, she's good. Yeah, she's funny. She's like a massive diva, yeah.
Yeah, she's sort of like a Samantha character.
Yeah, yes. She's the kind of clear
but
Samantha
replacement. I have to say, that opening episode, when it first began, I mean, we can talk about it, right? Because everyone, well, it's been on now. But like, there's an opening montage of various sort of like sexy scenes.
Yes.
And I was just like, as soon as that started, whoa, I was like, no. Let's not do that. I mean, not because like Sex and City obviously is full of sex and stuff like that, but it was just very cheesy montages of various, like all of the women basically trying to seduce their men. I was like, I don't think this is a thing.
Yeah. What do you think? It was it was awkward. Yeah. And somehow, because remember they did a similar thing on Sex Education, didn't they? I think series two started with a big sex montage thing. But I think
that was better.
Yeah, it was much better. Yeah, it was much more kind of, I don't know, it was just funnier.
This felt very forced, and it just felt like, okay, we are Sex and City. We will open this up with a montage of various states, you know, like acts of seduction, which actually weren't that, you know, seductive.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah. I have been watching. We watched the wrong show on Sky Sci-Fi. James, you picked the wrong show. So we did The Ark, right?
We did. And I can only continue to apologise for that.
Deeply, deeply mediocre. In fact, worse than mediocre. It was shit.
It was just bad. Yeah.
But there's another show on Sky Sci-Fi.
Is there?
I discovered. Yes. Called The Swarm.
I don't know anything about this. Huh.
Yes.
Is it about bees?
No. So not to be confused with the famously terrible 1970s disaster movie, The Swarm, which was about bees and starred Michael Caine in one of his worst ever roles. And it's a genuinely terrible film.
Did Michael Caine play a bee?
No. No, I believe he played like some kind of scientist grappling with the bees, coming up with a way of dealing with the bees, the bee. This is, The Swarm, in this case, are underwater worms.
Okay.
What?
Yes. And they are causing havoc. I mean, you don't find out they're underwater worms until...
Right,
I mean,
you've spoiled it. Excellent.
Well, no, I mean, like, episode 2, I think, maybe.
Right. In fact, that's... Everyone, Boyd has ruined The Swarm. Don't watch it.
Oh, my God.
Oh, dear, you're going to get hate mail.
I'm prepared to deal with it. Anyway, this is like a global... It covers all... It's very high production values. I think it originates in Germany. It's like a kind of European co-production with various companies, including Sky, I guess. But it kind of goes from like Scotland, the coast of Scotland, to Canada, to all different kind of places around the world. And basically, the way this swarm thing is affecting the world is that, like, suddenly, like, massive schools of whales, as in, like, you know, killer orcas, gather in the ocean and get attacked by these things. And it causes huge kind of...
Wait, the whales get attacked by the worms.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm simplifying the situation.
You're not selling it brilliantly.
Boy, no, this sounds shit.
All you need to know is, if you like a disaster movie like I do, as I've said many times before on this thing, this is classic disaster movie, but played out in a 7-8 episode.
When did it begin?
When did it arrive on Sky Sci-Fi?
Well, no, specifically, why did we miss it? Like, you know,
I think it was like about 3 or 4 weeks ago, maybe. It was a busy week. I think it just got lost in the... I don't think Sky particularly
told us,
alerted anyone to it. Yeah. So I just kind of thought, oh, what's that thing called The Swarm? The reason I kind of spotted it because I was thinking, no, that can't be. There's also another thing called Swarm, which is arriving with Donald Glover, which is different, right? That's more of like a horror-y type thing.
No worms in that one.
No worms, as far as I'm aware. But honestly, this show, The Swarm, and I think it's only on free on Sky Sci-Fi for the next week or so, maybe. And then I think they're going to start charging people to watch it, basically, as they sometimes do.
Okay.
So catch it while you can. It is mad, but it's also very entertaining, but also very slick. Unlike that terrible The Ark,
this is slick,
well-made, well-fit, well-shot, well acted.
How big are the worms? Are they big, gigantic CGI worms?
No. It's more like there's swarms of them. There's loads of them. And they do get bigger and bigger. I haven't finished the whole series yet, by the way. I've still got a few episodes to go. So I'm not sure myself how big they're going to get, to be honest. They could
become sandworms from Dune.
Yeah, it could be Dune style. But I'm very much enjoying it, is the bottom line. And if you like that kind of thing, it is quite pulpy and, you know, kind of over the top, but in a fun way, much more fun than the Ark.
Than the Ark, yes. Again, yeah, so, my apologies for that.
That's okay.
That's now the benchmark for everything.
It is. I mean, it's actually really good because I've artificially now set the bar so low that anything I showcase from now, I should be like, you know what, this is all right.
Actually, that has happened so far with that Seth MacFarlane one.
That's true. It's true.
I was we like, did this that with is better
the
than the Ark.
The Orville, which we covered last week on Pilot Plus, for those who don't know. Can I just say, so I've watched a lot this week. I've been catching up. I've been catching up, making up for lost time. I've watched Jack Ryan. Can't talk about it. It's embargoed. I've watched both parts, A and B, of the new season, the third season of The Witcher. It's embargoed. Can't talk about it. I've watched Foundation, or at least started Foundation. It's embargoed. Can't talk about it.
That's a shame.
I haven't watched all of Foundation. I've begun it. I have not finished it. I only watched a couple of episodes. But the one thing I can talk about is I finished His Dark Materials, which, yes, you'd be right in saying it's taken me some time to get to, but I realised, looking at that, I hadn't finished it. And I was like, oh, I must finish His Dark Materials. So I watched the end of the third and final season of His Dark Materials and very much enjoyed it, not least of all because way, way, way back when I read the Philip Pullman books, I only ever read the first two and I never read the third one. So I had no idea how this story ended. So this was all new stuff to me. And I really liked it. It was good.
Wow. I definitely wasn't expecting that.
Yeah.
You know, you continue all the previous things I was totally expecting.
Yeah.
The Witcher, Foundation. But to finish, I think I did finish it myself when it went out. So, yeah, it was good. It was a really good, really, they did a really good job with that show.
Jack it was Gorn. Bold, it was lavish, it was slick, it was all of these things. I thought they did a very good job with the whole thing. I mean, obviously, Lyra ages by about, like, 7 years during the course of the show, or at least looks to. I don't think she actually aged by 7 years, but she suddenly, if you look at her from the first episode and then the last episode, it looks like there's a decade between them. But, you know, other than that, I thought it was great. And I should mention, for those of you like Kay, who are mortified that I cannot go into excruciating detail on both Jack Ryan and The Witcher, you would please know.
We've got support group, don't you worry about that.
Oh, you don't need a support group, Kay, because this week's Pilot Plus is going to be all Jack Ryan, all Witcher end to end, because both embargoes will have lifted and we're going to get into both of those shows there. Yes, which means Kay gets to watch The Witcher.
I don't remember the planning discussion for this.
Boyd, this isn't a democratic process.
Hey, I mentioned it on the chat. I said on the chat, and Kay, I even gave you the option of watching one or the other. I said, you can pick Jack Ryan, you can pick The Witcher. Obviously, you should clearly watch both. But generous. I think you should watch The Witcher because I think we'll make for a much more entertaining discussion.
I'm not here as your entertainment, James.
I beg to differ.
I also want to watch some quality. Boyd, which one do you... I trust Boyd more than you, obviously.
Boyd's seen both of them, haven't you?
Not the new stuff.
I think Jack Ryan.
Have you seen New Witcher?
Oh, I've seen the first episode, yeah. Yes. Or first two, however many they showed us, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's true. Well, The Witcher is going to be very complicated and confusing if they don't do a full recap lasting about 20 minutes, whereas Jack Ryan, you can just pick it up.
No, I would argue that both of those things
really?
Are true. Without dicing with the embargo, I would say, I'm not sure, if you were to ask me which one would be less accessible for Kay, I couldn't easily answer that question, yes.
But the ones in The Witcher are all called Geralt von blah blah, blah and at least the Jack Ryan characters have normal names. EA. Umlaut, Y.
It's true. They do have normal names. I will give you they have normal names.
Yeah.
I'm already getting irritated by it, James.
Yeah. It's going to be fantastic. But anyway, we'll cover that on this week's Pilot Plus. Before we continue with this particular podcast, though, I think it's time for our first guest, which, ironically, we're going to have to end this podcast in a timely fashion so that Boyd can do this interview because it has not yet happened. So I'm going to say this interview went really, really well, unless it didn't. But this is Candice Carty-Williams. She's the creator of this week's Champion, writer and creator of this 8-part BBC series about a pair of siblings, Bosco and Vita Champion, who develop, shall we say, a keen musical rivalry that splits their family. And Boyd sat down, or Will sat down, or is in the process of sitting down. This is like Schrodinger's interview. We don't know whether it's alive or dead. But he may sit down. Will sit down, has sat down with Candice to talk all about her debut original TV project.
Welcome, Candice Carty-Williams, to the Pilot TV podcast. How's it going?
It's all good, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm good. The last time I saw you on the Zoom situation was when we were both judges at the BAFTA TV Awards for Best Actor. How did you enjoy that experience?
I enjoyed it a lot. I always go into these things thinking I want to be really shy and not say anything. But when I'm really passionate about something, it kind of trumps everything. So I was really, really, I liked it a lot. Did you like it?
Yeah, I thought it was fascinating. Yeah, because also we were on with like proper actors, weren't we? They really knew what it meant to be an actor, I think.
Right, the ins and outs. It was very intense, but I learned a lot.
Yeah,
a lot.
Same. saying. Now, that's not the reason you're joining us though today. You're joining us because you have created this new BBC TV series Champion, BBC and Netflix TV series Champion, which is your first. You're known as an award-winning, fantastic novelist, but this is your first original TV drama. Now, that is a huge thing, isn't it, to take on? Not only are you creating your own TV drama, it's set in the music business. It's set, which is a very specific world. It has actual music created for the characters involved who perform this music. All of this, that's a lot to tackle. But did you kind of go into it thinking, yep, this is going to be fine. I can do all this. It's going to be great.
Do you know what? I think because I'm so obsessed with music, I was like, if I'm same with writing with stories, my thing is like, if I love something and I respect it and I care about it, I can do it. And so I went into it being like, if I, you know, if it was about like jazz, for example, I'd be like, I think this is for someone else to do. But because it was about UK road rap, it was about grime, about drill, about neo soul, R&B, I was like, I know what I'm doing. I've been doing this. I've been doing music as a thing that I love for, you know, all of my life. So I was like, if I'm willing to listen and I'm willing to learn and work with people who know exactly what's going on, it's going to be all right. And it was.
It absolutely was. Yeah, totally. But because authenticity is the key, isn't it? Like, you know, kind of, I guess, so your interest and knowledge of that scene, is that, did you do extra research as well? Did you meet, you know, real life people who are involved in that world, you know, musicians, or did you kind of just write the script yourself and thought, this is, I know what it's about, this is what I'll do?
Well, funnily, my beginnings of writing were in music journalism. So my first and sort of longest placement was at Pop Justice, run by Peter Robinson.
Yes.
And so actually pop music is kind of like very much my bag. So I like kind of, that's kind of like the base level of what I was doing. And so I knew a lot about the world. I knew a lot about how it worked. I have a lot of friends who are musicians, music journalists. You know, you just kind of piece these things together. And so, yes, we did research in the writer's room. We got a lot of musicians in to talk about their experiences. We got managers in, we got label representatives in, and kind of made them sign these huge NDAs and just like, tell us everything you know. And so we got a lot of intel that way. So in all 8 episodes of Champion, anything that you see is not too far from the truth. And there's a lot of stuff that we kind of were like, if we write this thing that we know has happened, people won't believe it. It's too ridiculous. So we did our research and we learned some really sad things. We learned some really sad things, some really amazing things, but also some really shocking things.
Because yeah, that's really interesting. Because I guess one of the fascinating things about the whole show that is you've got these two siblings who are kind of have a fascinating relationship with each other, with their mother, etc. But yeah, you're tackling, you know, the guy, the main star has anxiety issues, which I think you see in the very first scene, which I thought was fascinating. Mm-hmm. To start with that is a really kind of interesting, bold move. Was that something that you wanted to place up front right from the start?
Yes, for sure. So mental health, if anyone has read Queenie, that's one of the things that I'm really concerned with. I've always been really interested in mental health and how it affects the Black community, how it affects women in Queenie, but also how it affects men in Champion, and how it affects a musician and what that looks like, and how actually we get to go behind the scenes of this man who is about to come out on stage in front of thousands of people and perform and have what looks like the time of his life. But we also know that, you know, there are such undertones to that. And we never think about, I don't think in the music industry, never really thinks about how people are feeling and what they can and can't do. Lewis Capaldi is a very interesting example. He is not a Black man, but I've also watched his documentary and seen what he's going through. And it's like, if you are not underrepresented in that industry and you're being treated like that, what happens when you are the minority in the music industry, but obviously not in the, you know, in the urban music industry, because, you know, it's thinking about, you know, who has the positions of power in that and who is looked after and who is not.
Midway through the first episode, there's this scene where the police arrive. It's a celebration of my character's birthday. And then very short, that was so brilliantly handled, the way it was directed, the way it was shot. And it's a sudden, it's so sudden that you almost don't have time to work out what's going on. And as a dramatization of, you know, police racism, let's face it, and what these characters have to deal with on a daily basis, that if white people don't have to deal with on a daily similar way, it's such an effect. When did you come up with the idea of that scene? And why was it important for you to show particularly the police involved in that situation?
Well, I think I see a lot of, I mean, a lot of this stuff as well, it's based on what I've seen. So it's also, I've seen rappers be disproportionately targeted. They're just on their way to venues and they are stopped and searched, which is amazing. And also when they are in music venues, they're about to do their shows, the police come, huge police presence. So they always have the police as this force kind of closing in on them all the time, whether they are convicted, whether they're charged, whether there's an allegation, anything. It's kind of like anything really goes. You know, in the simplest terms, it's really unfair and it's really affecting. And having this be at this character's birthday party, he is having a celebration with his family and friends. Everyone is having a good time. And the police knock his mum's gates off the hinges because they're going to arrest him for a noise disturbance. You know, and it's like these things happen again. As I say, like a lot of the stuff in Champion is stranger than fiction, but it happens in real life. And so that comment on the police and how people are treated, it really is about just being like, look at the effects it has. You know, you see in the paper, you see on social media, but also look at what it's like when someone is just with their family, trying to put everything past them, and this is what they have to deal with. So it's a really powerful scene. It was really painful to film. And for Malcolm, who plays Bosco, he was also so affected by it. And we had to really look after him after that scene because it was hard. But also, it's not too far from the lives of him, the people he knows, you know, the world. That's how it's going still.
Yeah, I mean, the injustice is so palpable in that scene. That's the thing. That's what is so powerful. I can imagine that you need to, I mean, and the mother is so fantastic in that as well.
Nadine Marshall. Yeah, she.
Formidable.
Formidable, but also that at the end, that was ad-libbed. Her entire response to was ad-libbed, and it was just her stepping inside of that character and feeling what would be felt. And she just did. We were all kind of awestruck. We were all kind of, I don't think even when it was like time to cut, we were all just kind of blinking.
And it's interesting, her relationship with Vita. So her relationship with her daughter, because you do, this is such a series of interesting, fully rounded characters, but the way she treats her daughter is really unfair. I mean, that's the bottom line, isn't it? Certainly, to start with. And again, that feels like a kind of very interesting observation you make, that a mother, as brilliant as she is, would treat her daughter and her son differently in quite a fundamentally unfair way as far as Vita, the daughter's concerned. Where did that idea come from, that you wanted to explore that?
Well, that idea came from sort of just being a woman in a family. And I remember in a Black Caribbean family, and I remember when I was really young, I remember watching my nan cooking dinner and she served my granddad first. And he'd been watching TV. And I said to her when I was maybe like 7, why have you given him his food first? You've been doing everything. And she was like, that's just the way it is. Bosco is the golden boy of that family. He is also the golden goose in that, like, he is the person who's been bringing the money in. But Maria doesn't take any of that money. Her thing is making sure that her son is okay. And her thing is, I'm caring so much about my son that I'm not caring about what my daughter needs. And I'm not caring. We're all here to make sure that the son is okay. And you see it time and time again. And I will always write things that I see, that I have observed, that I don't think are quite okay, and that I'd like people to talk about and think about. And with this one, I'm interested in how much trouble I might get into for saying that. But I do think it's true, and I believe it's true. And a lot of my, you know, the screening was a couple of days ago, and so many of my friends have been like, yo, that's me and my brother. That's what it's like. And I'm like, yeah, no, I know. And I have stepbrothers and I have half brothers, and you know, it's all there. It's all there.
Let's talk about the casting, because I'd say not only did you have to find people who could act convincingly, depict these emotions, and the whole gamut of emotions, they also had to be able to perform, your lead character, sing convincingly. Yes. I mean, how difficult was it to find those cast members?
How difficult was it? So it was really interesting in terms of Bosco. That was the one that I was kind of like, this guy has to carry an incredible arc, really intense emotional scenes, this outpouring of his anxiety, of his pain that he's never been able to experience, you know, openly before. But he also has to be able to rap really well. And I was like, I think we need to find a musician who can do this. We saw a lot of musicians' tapes and I was like, they're really good. Their music is really good. But also in terms of places that we needed Bosco to go, we were never quite there. We did find someone who was really, really, really amazing. But my thing was like, he just doesn't really carry that darkness, I think, well. I think he's, you know, he's really good, but he also feels like he's kind of had like a kind of fun, nice life. And that's coming out in the work. The producer said, oh, hey, I worked with Malcolm Camulete on on a short film I did. I don't think he's got an agent or anything. Do you want to look at his tape? And I was like, I really think that, you know, we have to push on with this casting. But I was like, it's Malcolm. He was in Top Boy. He was incredible. I'm going to give him a go. And I watched 2 seconds. I said, okay, it's him. Okay, fine. fine. And I was so glad that I was like, let me just give it a second. Let me give it a go. But he is amazing. He's the way that his mind works is amazing. And Getz wrote his songs for him. He wrote the songs for Bosco. And Getz would send over a song. I'd send it to Malcolm. And Malcolm would send me back less than 5 minutes later a word bar perfect replication of what Getz had done. He was incredible. The way his mind works is astonishing. And so, yeah, that was that. And then for Vita, we saw so many girls. And again, I was like, it needs to be someone who is a really, really great singer, but also someone who can carry that and who can be this person who is so small, but can be so fierce and can grow and can do this thing where at the end of series one, she says to her brother, do you know what? It's me and you now. I was like, who is this person going to be? And we looked. And eventually we did like a sort of kind of close to final round of reads. And there was this girl who was, I didn't even realize she was coming to audition because she was there with a suitcase in the casting, in the casting office. And I said, hi, what's this suitcase about? And she was like, I'm here to audition. I'm going to do hair after this. I've got all my kit to do like hair, people's hair and the thing. And I was like, yeah, no, that's her. I was just like, yes, they need to be able to do the music. But again, it's about like having faith in, you know, it's about being like, you're the character.
So Deja's like side hustle in the sequel, yeah. That helped get her the role. That's brilliant.
Literally, yeah.
And as well, because you are the showrunner of this show, you know, aren't you? And so you're producing it, you've created it, et cetera. So you're also picking, I guess, the directors, because you also have got a series of young Black British directors working on this show. How did you find them? And how did you kind of work out that they would work?
So it was looking at people's work, first of all. Because obviously, like, you know, you don't know the person, you get to see the work, but then you watch their short films, you watch what they've done before, and you're kind of like, okay, does this gel with my eye for the show? Does it gel with my eye, my style? And then you talk to them. And basically my question was always like, how do you feel about collaboration? Because it's one of those things where show running is kind of an American thing. It's not necessary. And like Jesse Armstrong does it obviously for Succession, which is an American show. So it's kind of like, we don't really have it here. Shonda Rhimes, obviously, but again, American. So you're like, okay, in terms of like a British showrunner, what does that mean? So my thing is about collaboration, also kind of being like, you have to know that people are going to be irritated with you because, you know, it's just kind of looking at these people and being like, okay, chatting to them and being like, so what does it feel like when I might have to come and ask you things? On set, and it's just judging that, but you know, they were all everyone had a very different way of working, but ultimately I was like, the style of things is what's important to me, and they each brought something really special. And yeah, as I say, it was my job to just be like, okay, is this all going to make sense? But also being like, it's really important to look at the talent, and I guess the we don't have enough still Black British directorial talent in the UK. But I think we found some really incredible people. And, you know, looking at these episodes and looking at the journey that they went on, I think like episode one, especially for me, just seeing some of John's work. So John Ogunmiwa, the first block director, some of his scenes are so beautiful. You know, some of the ways that he looks at color and light are so remarkable. And then for episode six, we were filming in Jamaica. And Caleb Femi was the director. And I'd loved his work. He's a poet and a writer and a director. And I'd loved his work. I love how he does things with light and with colour and with tone and with feeling. And he said to me, I need to sit next to you every single day. I need you to be with me every day because you are the architect. And I need to figure out what happens from you, from your brain. Filming in Jamaica was its own thing. Everything looks absolutely incredible just because we're in Jamaica. Everything is different. You know, everything is gorgeous. And that landscape became a character of its own, you know. It's hard work, of course, being like, okay, so there are 4 different people and we need to stick to one vision. You know, I'm very exacting and I'm not afraid of getting into it.
At the BFI, you described yourself as a control freak. Do you think you have to be in this kind of situation?
You do. You have to be a control freak and you have to back yourself. You have to be like, yeah, no, I'm standing in front of you for a reason. And as a Black woman, that has definitely been something. It's definitely been something to stand in front of every single type of person and be like, yeah, I know that you're not expecting me to be here and to be the boss, but I am. But, you know, it's also about being nice. And it's also about being like, what are we all going through and what are we all feeling? And I like communication, and that's important. And I think by the end, all of the directors understood that, yeah, we're going to communicate. We're not going to just have like, we're not going to argue, but we're going to communicate and we're going to get this done.
What was the hardest challenge for you for the whole, making the whole series?
The hardest challenge, I think, I mean, it's kind of the general sort of, you're a novelist with yourself in your room, and then you're running a show where you're talking to sometimes like 100 people a day. I am shy. I am quite quiet. I obviously I'm doing a podcast with you, but a lot of the time when it comes to sort of everything else, I listen more than I talk. And so, yeah, it's kind of just being like, okay, you know, talk to 100 people and be like, hello, how are you today? When actually you've spent a lot of time in your room, just being like, how do you feel in yourself? And then suddenly being like, oh, a million people have a million problems. How do we solve it? And so that was a challenge, but also the music. My goodness, the music, what a thing. Incredible music. I am super excited about it. A soundtrack is coming. We're going to announce that very soon because it's with an incredible label. Like, it's like my dreams have come true. But it was being like, how do we start with nothing and end up with sort of three songs an episode, three good songs, three songs that were written by people that we are all amazed by, in awe of. Getz is incredible. Like, the first meeting that we had with him, I was like, I was hearing him be like, yeah, no, I relate to him. I like Bosco's cool. I was like, am I dreaming? Is this what I've died and gone to heaven? And then working with new talent. So a singer called Debbie wrote all of Vita's songs, but also working with Shola Ammer. And wow. Toddler T. It was like, it was basically just like, what's the shopping list of the things that I love? And working with an amazing music team, working with us, Hattie Collins, who is just like a legend in the game. Kat Greaves, who's like an award-winning music supervisor, who, you know, had gone, you know, Killing Eve, amazing work. She'd been like, okay, so how do we, you know, find the best songs for this? Suddenly I was like, Kat, you need to call up Millions' manager and find out where that song is. And she would just be like, yeah, I'm on it. I've done it. We were all just doing things we've never done before. We were all just making music. We were all being A&Rs. And we were just like, we were meant to make a TV show, but suddenly we're like in Getz's studio in like the middle of nowhere being like, hi. So basically what we'd love to see from this song is, do you know what I mean? Like,
it was just that, like, is amazing. Yeah.
And then like in Jamaica, going to like Big Yard Studios at like 3 o'clock in the morning because we couldn't find the files, and then like banging on the door and like climbing over the fence and just like running around after like, I could do anything now that I've done Champion, like anything in the world. And
it sounds like the making of the show would be a brilliant kind of work in itself, like to see.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's honestly like a TV show. It's like a TV show in itself of all of us trying to get it done. But the music was difficult, but the most rewarding thing I've ever done in my life, I think. The whole show is, I think, it's so rewarding in so many ways. And I watch it and I am super proud and super, super, I'm super happy with it.
Oh, I mean, you should be. It's a fantastic watch.
Thank you.
It's brilliant. Thank you so much, Candice, for joining us, and congratulations. Yeah, it's a hugely entertaining show. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Boyd.
That may or may not have been Boyd and Candice Carty-Williams. It's hard to say at this stage. But let's move on to this week's listener question, which we are going to tackle in a very timely fashion again, because we are pressed for time this week. This comes from Maverick. And Maverick says, there's been a few podcasts turned into TV shows with mixed results, but I wondered if you think it's a good idea and if there are any podcasts you listen to that would make great TV shows. I've been listening to a few lately that would be interesting TV shows, like Scamander and A Very British Cult. There have, in fact, been quite a few of these, haven't they, podcasts which have turned into TV shows. And this rather neatly taps into a conversation we had on last week's Pilot Plus when we pitched to ITVX the pilot TV show, which is based on this very, very podcast. I haven't heard from ITV yet. I'm not sure why. I suspect there's been some kind of email server issue, which is why I've not had their offers for the rights to that show. But I have a spin on this, which I'm going to share with you at the end of this question. Guys, do you have any particular podcast you listen to that you would like to see adapted for the screen?
I'm just going to say that the one that came to mind, if correspondent, what's his name again?
Maverick.
Maverick.
Maverick hadn't mentioned, it is a very British cult, because that is the podcast. That's also a TV series, by the way, a brilliant TV, which I think I might have mentioned on this podcast. Hopefully I did when it went out a couple of months ago. And this is an absolutely riveting and scary story of this organization known as the Lighthouse, And they kind of, through mentoring programs and kind of, you know, like training, psychological training things. And it was just, it's just this, and then basically people ended up, as they often do with these things, giving money to them and kind of getting them, isolating them from their friends and families, affected people's marriages. It's a really shocking, gripping story. So that, I think, would be perfect. That is the one for me. Because I don't listen to that many. I mean, I listen to, like, you always get, like, true crime podcasts. You know, there are loads of true crime podcasts, which almost any of them of any worth whatsoever do inevitably get brought up to be turned into a limited series. But I haven't heard that this one has been yet, very British cult. And I think that's one of the most I'm obsessed with cults anyway, religious cults. And they deny, by the way, they are a cult, of course, the Lighthouse people. But that is the most interesting one. So that is the one that he suggested. I'm slightly cheating. But the other possibility, of course, is that Kay and I's favourite podcast, The Wolf and Owl, which is with comedy podcasts with Tom Davis, Big Tom Davis, and Ramesh Ranganathan. They themselves, I believe, do you remember, they said this, Kay, in one of the episodes, they're in talks to do a project together, like a film or something. And, you know, they could do like a limited series based on their escapades that they talk about in that podcast.
Oh, I would love that.
Yeah.
That would be the dream.
Yeah, that is the dream. That's the other one that comes to mind.
We should say, like, in terms of ones that have already been made, Archive 81, which you love, Boydie, that was based on a podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
Obviously, Serial has had its had its true crime spin-off as well for the screen. Yeah, The Case Against Adnan Ziad was a TV show.
I love the podcast for that, yeah.
Yeah, Dirty John, Dr. Death, which we may or may not have reviewed in the past. That was based on a podcast. The Dropout, Gaslit, Homecoming, Limetown. Do you remember Limetown? That was also based on a podcast where the whole town basically vanishes. Shrink Next Door. We Crash. These are all based on podcasts. So I do not understand why Pilot TV could not be made into a podcast. Not podcast. It is a podcast. Why it could not be made into a TV show, and why ITVX will not send me that check for £1 million that I asked for. I don't understand.
It doesn't make any sense.
It makes no sense to me. Absolutely no sense to me at all.
Tumbleweed.
Yeah, exactly. See, the thing is, I mainly listen to, well, the main podcast I listen to at the moment is Ty and That Guy, which is obviously based, it's a podcast around episodes of The Expanse. So that would be the snake eating its own tail if they then made The Expanse based, or a show based on this podcast about The Expanse. That makes no sense at all. And The West Wing Weekly was another one that I listened to very religiously, but again, based on The West Wing, so you can't do that either. But in terms of original content podcasts, I don't really listen to many of them. I really like The Guilty Feminist. I've not listened to it in a while, but that doesn't really lend itself to a show, I wouldn't think. I don't know. I don't have an answer for you. But luckily, I don't need an answer for you. And you know why that is? That is because ITV have been dragging their collective heels over licensing our TV show. Again, ITV, sort yourselves out. But because they have, Darren, our editor Darren, has kicked things up a notch.
What?
And he's started the he's greased the wheels. He's got the ball rolling. And what Darren did was he called up a high-powered content creator.
Wait.
By which I mean ChatGPT. He said to ChatGPT, please, can you give us pilot episode of the Pilot TV TV show? So ChatGPT has created a teleplay for our first episode. Now, we're pressed for time, so I'm not going to read it out to you here. So what we're going to do
is... Surely, this should be a read-through at the live event.
No. This week's Pilot Plus, we are going to perform the first episode of the Pilot TV show based on this screenplay that has been generated by AI. So
listen, if it means I don't have to watch a sci-fi show, I'm here for it.
Okay, good. So
how long is the this ChatGPT?
It might be 7 hours. I've no idea. I've looked through it. It's manageable. It's doable. You know, you can have your script. You don't need to learn your lines.
Why don't we just do like 10-minute installments? So like it's like a serial across all the pluses.
Yeah,
it's not that long. But I mean, look, we can mix out. I could play Kay. Kay could play Boyd. Like, you know, it's the casting is open. I'm open to all
this
options.
This is mind spangling. Yes, all of it.
So this week's Pilot Plus. Tune in for the first episode of the Pilot TV TV show. It's going to be very, very exciting.
I mean, that's worth the price rise alone.
Right? Exactly that. If you would like your letter read out, or indeed your screenplay acted out, do send them over to us via DM on Instagram or Twitter at Pilot TV Pod, or to me directly, which frankly is far less hassle for me, at James C. Dyer on Instagram. Let's move on. Should we talk news? I mean, I'll kick off news by saying this, that we've mentioned our AI-created TV show, so this will be a pot kettle black situation. But did you see that the title sequence to Secret Invasion, which we reviewed last week, was created by AI?
Oh, no.
Was it?
Yes. Controversially, they announced this week, or last week as we go out, that they thought it would be thematically in keeping with the show and not knowing what is or is not real to have AI create the title sequence. Now, you could say that during the midst of a strike and more strikes to come about the use of AI, they might have, I don't know, read the room a little bit. But no, there was a horrendous backlash to this announcement. People are up in arms and furious, and they are desperately trying to backpedal by saying, no, you don't understand. We paid actual people to ask the AI to do it, so it's fine.
Oh, okay.
Right. So they're trying to spin it by saying they haven't cut people out of the creative process. Artists have been paid. They've just, instead of being paid to design it, they've been paid to chat to ChatGPT or whatever and get that to do it.
That's not a thing. They need to not do that anymore.
Yeah, the title sequence looks like it's been created by AI. But yeah.
I can't remember what the title sequence is. What is the title sequence?
It's like Skrulls and Fury turning into a Skrull, and it's all like, it's lots of like weird changing imagery, but it has that slightly alien quality to the aesthetic, in the same way that, I don't know if you ever use Midjourney or any of those AI created sort of like image creation tools, they have that thing like when they show you pictures of people, occasionally they will give you they'll give you a picture of a person as if they've never seen a person, but they've had one described to them, and it has that quality too. It's like you've heard of humans, you're just not quite sure what they actually look like. it does have a slightly weird quality. I mean, there's no sign of the Pope in a puffer jacket, unfortunately, but other than that, it's quite scrolly. So that was a thing that happened this week in the news. Have you heard of anything else that's happened?
Yes. So Harlan Coben's Shelter, which is the 8-episode series, is going to premiere globally on the 18th of August on Prime Video, which I'm excited about because we love us some Harlan Coben. And also the other bit of exciting news, which Boyd actually might be going to talk about because it involves Doctor Who, is that Lenny Rush, who was in Daisy May Cooper's Am I Being Unreasonable, who is the fantastic child actor who won the BAFTA for, I think it was Best Male Performance. He's going to be in Doctor Who alongside Shuti Gatwa as a character called Morris, apparently, which I think is a fantastic casting.
No, I mentioned that last week. I might not have done, but I can't remember when. I meant to. But yeah, that is very
we may or may not have mentioned it last week.
The casting, the just general casting of Doctor Who this at the moment is just unbelievable. They're really going for it with a kind of constantly fascinating series of announcements every other week, basically. But yeah, that's one of the best bits of casting news, I think.
You'd have been furious in the Empire office this week if you'd been there, Boydie, because two people, and I'm not going to name them, Ben Travis, took against Secret Invasion in a big way and dropped the ultimate slur. He was like, it just looked like Doctor Who. And I was like,
oh, God.
he was not happy.
Youngsters of today don't know when they're born, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks great, as does Doctor Who these days.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, sure. FUBAR's coming back. Do you see this? FUBAR has been confirmed for second season. I don't know if we did talk about that last week. We might well have done. It's hard to say. But Arnie,
no, we didn't.
Back,
I'm surprised
back.
At that.
I'm a little surprised by that. But, you know, you can never have too much Arnie. I think I think we've learned that.
I'm sure it's doing very well for the Netflix.
I would think
Talking
so.
Of which, did you see that Netflix have updated their top 10 charts to include estimated viewers in addition to hours viewed?
Okay.
So they're now telling us, basically, that they estimate the number of people watching a show by taking the traditional hours viewed that they provided before, divided that by the film or show's running time, total runtime. So basically, they're saying that Wednesday, by the way, Wednesday, you know that that series?
Yes.
Is now the biggest hit in Netflix history. Were you aware of this?
What?
Yeah,
more than aware of this.
Yes.
What was the other?
Stranger Things.
Bridgerton.
Yeah.
Now, The Witcher was up there as well.
Yeah. Wednesday is now number one with an estimated 252 million views. in the first 61 days of availability.
Do you know what? I love this estimated views. Do you know what? Yes. It's funny you should say that, Boyd. I was actually going to tell you this recently. It's quite exciting, and I think this should help people in their decision to subscribe to Pilot Plus. We have an estimated 3.6 million listeners to this podcast. Did you know that? That is based on my new estimating algorithm, which is entirely accurate and not entirely in any way pulled out of my ass. 3.6 million people listen to this podcast according to my estimations.
Absolutely, that makes total sense. Yeah.
And as many good reviews, which means James is definitely going to be playing the guitar at the live event.
If my finger's grown back by then, yeah, we'll see what we can do.
Oh yeah, I forgot about the finger. God. But the most interesting thing is to get the updated chart of their biggest hits of all time. And I will just give you the top kind of five, maybe top 10. Wednesday, number one. Two is Stranger Things. Three is Dharma, the Jeffrey Dahmer story. The third biggest Netflix show of all time. Bridgerton, four. The Queen's Gambit is at five. Which came as some surprise to me. He's English language, by the way. The Night Agent is already at six. Remember the Night Agent?
Honestly.
Yeah. Really?
Amazing. I mean, that's just Kay watching it for the hunky agent at the heart of it. Oh. Yeah, that's literally
Even I was like, shocked at that.
And down at number nine is The Witcher. But to be fair, it is number nine. That's pretty good for a hardcore, nerdy fantasy thing. Although, obviously, Game of Thrones did quite well as well at the time. And the top non-English languages, Squid Game, Money Heist, Lupin, etc. But yeah, there you go. So that's a big Netflix story. And the other Netflix story, there's another Netflix story, which is interesting, another kind of businessy type. So Ryan Murphy is leaving Netflix.
Yes.
You know, he signed that deal for like hundreds of millions of pounds 5 years ago. And he's joining Disney. It's confusing anyway, because he's made loads of stuff for Disney, basically FX, with all his American Horror Story stuff, etc. But it means that he's now not doing any stuff on Netflix at all.
How could he have done that if he had an exclusive deal with Netflix?
Well, it wasn't. The deal specifically allowed him to carry on doing his pre-existing shows for FX. Yeah, I mean, it was astonishing. But, I mean, he has made like 10 or something different series for Netflix, so they've done kind of okay out of it. And in fact, of course, the recent ones like The Watcher did really well on Netflix, and the Jeffrey Dahmer story, as I just mentioned. So they kind of his stuff got more and more successful quite recently. But it's still interesting that he is doing that. And there's one more. This is how all these are tied together. There's another story about how people are accusing Kim Kardashian, who is the star of his next American Horror Story series, currently filming in New York at the moment. People accused her of crossing the picket line for the writer's strike, and accusing him of saying that if you didn't carry on working during the strike, because his shows are still in production somehow at the moment. But he's denying that he's asking anyone to break the picket line. So it's a bit of a confusing situation. How can he be in production on his shows? How is Kim Kardashian filming and not crossing the picket line is an interesting question.
It's there definitely going to keep me up at night.
I bet. Yeah. Yeah, James kind of started going all glassy-eyed when I mentioned Kim Kardashian. But, I mean, she is acting I'm fascinated by this whole thing. We're going to have to come to grips with this.
She just had to deal with it.
Yeah, no, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. No, I'm trying to pay more attention to you since someone, like, whenever we get negative comments on the, I'm not going to bring up the negative reviews we've had this week, but one person accused us of just basically talking about, and I quote unquote, elite sci-fi. Elite sci-fi. I don't know what elite sci-fi is. Yes.
Out of the absolute drubbing review, I love that's the element that you picked up. I mean, it's good because I don't choose to go over it. But
I'm picking up on elite sci-fi. I would put it to you that we don't cover a lot of sci-fi on this podcast because you two don't let me. Like, what? We cover them every now and then, but I don't think we cover that much.
James, as if Boyd and I have any way of controlling you in any way. You just run roughshod over what we say and say, we're going to do this.
None of these things are true. I'm shocked and appalled.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even a question. That's ridiculous. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Yes, you're right. He was completely wrong. But no, the review, of course, that Kay is referring to is someone who mentioned that...
Oh, God, horrific. Right,
I'm going to read out the key bit, which is, hosts don't listen to what each other say. Checking emails as the other people speak doesn't make for sparkling conversation. Sorry, that's basically me.
No, but what I would say is sometimes when we're not listening, that is because like one of us is looking up something to fact check or say a next thing. Like,
I mean, also, to be fair to us, I think it adds to the general, joy, gaiety of nations, or whatever the phrase is, that every now and then, James in particular, he just drifts off a bit if it's not on one of his core subjects of interest. That's all. I jokingly say he's checking his emails. Most of the time, he actually isn't checking his emails, to be fair to him. He just gets a bit of a distant look in his eye, that's all. And that's what I joshingly refer to as checking his emails. It's partly my fault that I've spread this calumny, but it isn't. I don't think it's actually true that he's that rude. But
you're okay, because Domorama, for tis he / she who left this review, has many more complaints they wish to level at me too. James can't be bothered to watch some shows, brackets, usually when they don't involve infantile fantasy / sci-fi elements. Ooh, ow. I mean, come on, Domorama. I missed one show, like one solitary show, which is not bad when we've done nearly 250 episodes. So I think I can dodge that particular bit. But no, he continues. When he does watch them, he's been known to paint his ceiling as he does so. Not totally respectful to the program makers. Now, look.
No, I've got to defend James, right, with this, because that was one
ceiling.
Yeah. And also, how many times are, like, is this person not, like, checking their phone while they're watching something? Are they glued to their TV and showing the shows the utmost respect that they deserve?
Maybe.
People are always multitasking. I mean, admittedly, people aren't often doing home decoration.
It was 1 week, and the only shows I missed were Kunk on Earth and Karen Piri. And I went and rewatched all of Karen Piri afterwards because it was brilliant. I just missed bits of it because I was rolling the ceiling. But
did you go back and check, though? You just knew that off the top of your head?
No, I know that off the top of my head because I remember doing it. In fact, I almost remember the show better because I now associate them with painting the ceiling.
Weirdly, so, I remember you doing it during Kunk.
Yeah, there you go. Because I'd missed the part where they, you know, like, I was like, are they actors? Are they real? I think I'd missed a key part of it.
Right.
And
yeah,
I got, because I was painting the ceiling at the time, I'd kind of missed a key part of it. But that's fine. And I fessed up to it, which I thought was fine.
All Kunk episodes now on Netflix, by the way, in case people didn't know that.
Good stuff. Yeah. But the key part of this Domorama, which you are not seeing, is that when the TV show comes, this is going to make for brilliant content, where there'll be an episode where I'm literally painting a ceiling and Boyd and Kay are rolling their eyes. It's gonna be great. It's gonna be one of the best episodes. It'd be like a banner Nielsen ratings winner,
if you say so.
This person was not a fan. Ironically, the person they love the most of the three of us, understandably, is Boydo,
of course.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, what can
the
you
embodiment
do?
Of elite sci-fi.
Yeah.
So anyway, thanks for the feedback. Yeah.
Speaking of elite sci-fi, I think it's time to skip away from news, not least of all because we're running out of time, and come on to this week's second guest. Now, as you will know, elite sci-fiist that I am, I've been banging about Star Trek Strange New Worlds quite a lot of late because I basically came late to that particular party. Anyway, excited as I was for this show, I hailed the Enterprise and had Anson Mount, Captain Christopher Pike himself, beamed into the pilot TV studio where he proceeded to paint my ceiling while watching a TV show. And he chatted to me all about the new season 2 of Strange New Worlds. So this is me talking to Anson Mount.
Anson, welcome to the Pilot TV podcast. I have to say, over the last couple of months, I have become borderline obsessed with Strange New Worlds. But before I talk about that, there is something I wanted to mention, which is this. So we used to have a section on this podcast where we would talk about, in this era of peak TV, of incredible shows coming to streaming, shows that we thought were amazing but flew under the radar, particularly in the UK. And the one that I used to bring up quite a lot was Hell on Wheels, which is a phenomenal show, which over here aired on, I think, Turner Classic Movies, and no one in the UK seems to have heard of it, which is this huge injustice. And so I kind of wanted to ask you, you know, is making a modern Western the most fun you can have in front of a camera?
I had a tremendously good time. I mean, it's a whole chapter of my life. It was making Hell on Wheels. And I mean, in fact, at the end, during the shoot of the last episode, people kept asking me, and I said, it's a chapter. Yeah. That's a chapter. And I'm very proud of the show that we made. I think it's a fascinating piece of history. It's one of those TV ideas that was just kind of floating out there in the ether, and somebody was going to pluck it out of the air and do it. And the Gaytons did. And thankfully, they wanted to hire an actual Southerner. Because, I mean, you should have seen the stack of headshots from Australian actors that, you know, these days, if there's any role with testosterone, the casting directors just call Australians for some reason. Like, I'm not sure what that says about American men these days. But it was, I could not have done that job without having grown up in the South.
Yeah.
There is an entire, and particularly having grown up in the rural South, where a lot of my friends' fathers were Vietnam vets and dealing with PTSD, that was a very informative part of my childhood, it turns out. And, you know, there's an entire, even the Southern sense of humor is a completely different one, and the way of looking at the world. It was, I read that script and I was like, this is my role.
Yeah. He's a beautifully formed character, Bohannon. And you get to ride horses and beat, there's not a soundstage in sight on that show as well.
That was one of the best parts of the job, was riding horses, because they are the best actors that you will ever work with. I'm being quite serious about that, because every thought or emotion that a horse has is exhibited on their skin.
Mm.
They're so expressive when you learn how to read a horse, and so reactionary. And but there are things that you have to know about operating a horse on a set, which is a completely different skill set than just riding a horse. You have to know things like you do not open an umbrella around a horse.
They don't like umbrellas.
It's a little thing that becomes big very quickly.
Ah, so startling.
And you can startle a horse that way. Hoses. It's a snake. There are a lot. There are umbrellas and hoses everywhere on a set.
Not ideal for a horse, clearly.
No.
Not so bad for a Gorn, for example. And if you can't do a Western, why not do a space Western, which I guess is what Star Trek is, really, isn't it? Like, it's a space Western at heart, which is, I think, why it appeals to so many people, why it has so much longevity. But I do think Strange New Worlds is, I think it's fair to say, the best Trek on TV at the moment. I think it's even close. I think it's incredible. And I'm, like I say, I'm absolutely obsessed with it. But the reason I've only been obsessed with it recently is it took me a while to get around to watching it, because the format is quite old-fashioned. You know, it's a adventure of the week. It's quite episodic. And we've become so used in the streaming era to kind of serialized storytelling. You know, I was a little worried that I'd be like, oh, you know, it feels too much like a procedure. I wasn't sure I'd get it. And it wasn't until I watched it, I was like, there's a reason why Star Trek has persisted so long using that format. There's a reason why it, because it's perfect for that kind of storytelling. Like, when they pitched it to you and they said, look, it's going to be episodic, were you like, yes, that's like classic Trek? Or were you like, okay, that's interesting?
I brought it up.
Oh, really?
So first of all, look, my taste as a viewer is I like serialized stuff, right? And I think Discovery did very well with that format. But to me, a classic Star Trek show, it's not about Kirk, it's not about Picard, it's not about Pike. I'm not the star show. It's the Enterprise is the star show, and it operates on a format of the planet of the week, because the planet of the week is really, it's just the idea of the week. It's the big idea of the week. And you have to be able to get out of the way of that in order for the metaphorical platform to operate. And when you're trying to maintain 8x7 relationships every week, there's no room for that. So I brought it up, and thankfully, Alex Kurtzman had already been thinking the same thing, that it's going to be episodic in structure, and it's going to be very loose, very malleable show.
But I mean, even episodic as it is, so Discovery, and I won't throw shade at Discovery, I enjoy it as much as the next person, but even four seasons in, I'm not sure I could name every person on the bridge of that ship. And I felt after about four episodes of Strange New Worlds, I knew these characters. Like, I really knew them. And I think it does that thing where it may be episodic, but the character work is quite significant. Like, the growth these characters go through during the season is actually really impressive. Like, was that something that jumped out when you saw the first season scripts?
Yeah, definitely. I think the characters from the beginning were very well drawn. You could actually hear their tone coming through the pages. And it was very well cast with the rest of the, you know, we didn't know who we were going to end up working with. They managed to pull together a really talented group of adults who like working together. And I got to say, the format also, it provides us the opportunity to play not only with a different story each week, but a different way of getting there And so we've been having lots and lots and lots of discussions about genre, just as a jumping off point.
Yeah, well, you say that, but I must admit, as an actor, it must be really interesting because the variety you get is significant. So you've got the fantasy episode where you're kind of LARPing, which is hilarious. You've got the Gorn episode in the first season, which is like a straight up horror with lashings of Alien and Predator in there.
Yeah.
So it feels like it gives you an opportunity to have massive amounts of variety while portraying the same character, right?
It's almost like making a different TV show every week, which is tremendously exciting when you're doing long-form television. It keeps you on your toes, and also it really plays into that. I think all actors are people who couldn't decide what they wanted to be when they grew up, right? And so they found this thing that allowed them to be a jack of all trades in perpetuity. So it really plays into that. It's amazing to have a group of writers that's come to you and say, okay, give us ideas. Like, what genre have you never done before? What world do you want to be in? It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, because you've got comedy episodes. You've got much more somber episodes in there. I love the stuff that you do with Spock as well. Like, that's really funny. The kind of loads of comedy has been milked out of that character, which historically has not been the case with Spock.
Yeah.
Which I thought was so much fun.
Oh, Ethan's so great with comedy, man. Yeah. He is. And even it's tremendous to watch him do it while he is also playing such a corseted character. That's not easy to do.
It's amazing stuff. And like I said, the development is significant. I remember being on set of CSL Miami, which I believe you've done an episode of, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the actors there were quite open about the fact that as actors, they found it quite thankless, like playing the same character with two. And by design, those shows, they don't change because they need to be accessible. You need to be able to jump in at season 5 or 10 or whatever and pick it up as if you'd never seen any of the others. So they were like, you don't get any growth. Whereas this almost has the best of both worlds, to use a Star Trek title, because you have both. Like, you have this story of the week, but you also have characters who come such a long way. If you look at where, you know, I'm not going to name names because I don't want to give any spoilers away, but certain characters at the beginning of season 2, and you look where they were at the beginning of season 1, like, there's a significant difference to where they are.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah, it's great stuff. Now, Tim DeCree, you've said before, you're a big reader of science fiction stuff. Is that
true?
Like, what are your go-to science fiction authors, like, stories?
I've been reading the Brits recently. I really like Adrian Tchaikovsky. I read him on the set quite a lot, and actually reached out to him on Twitter, and he wrote back because he's a Trek fan.
Of course he is.
Who else have I been reading? Of course, now the name's gone out of my head.
Well, I mean, I bang on about The Expanse an awful lot. Obviously, James S.A. Corey's Expanse books are great.
I've heard they're very good, and I do like hard science fiction.
Yeah.
So I'll have to check. I have to check those out.
Yeah, and things like The Three Body Problem, which is coming to Netflix.
Oh my God, that's so good. Oh, yeah. Is it really?
It's coming to Netflix, and I mean the trailer.
Oh man, I hope they don't screw it up.
Well, exactly. But if you watch the trailer, like, it's incredibly dense. You're just like, I don't know what this is about, but it looks awesome.
Oh, I'm sure they spent a fortune on it too. I loved that entire trilogy of books. That was great.
Well, it feels like things like Foundation on Apple, I don't know if you saw that, have paved the way for this kind of previously inaccessible sci-fi, that people are now willing to give that more of a chance. Mm-hmm. And also budgets on streaming are significantly higher, so you can actually do justice to them, which is nice.
Oh, also, I've been reading a lot of Alistair Reynolds.
Okay.
I like quite a bit. I think he's great. Yeah, he's got some really great short stories too.
Mm. I mean, look, sci-fi's been around forever, but Star Trek has been around, it's nearly 60 years, right, of Star Trek. And yet it's still, I wouldn't even say it's still as popular. It's much more popular now, I would say, because it was quite niche, right, back in the 60s. Like, people enjoyed it, but there was a sort of a veneer of nerdiness to it. I'm a nerd, I can accept that. But nowadays, it does feel like it's broadened out and everyone kind of loves the show. Like, what do you think has kept that enduring? Like, why do you think people still love it?
You know, I don't know. I think that there's an intrinsic sense of optimism at the heart of Trek that exists as a counterpoint to all of the, I mean, man, if I see one more TV show set in a post-apocalyptic landscape, I'm going to puke. Okay. It's just, we have such a dour idea about our future. It's just gotten old.
Yeah.
And I think there's something really refreshing and hopeful about Star Trek. And it's interesting to see how that in itself has developed over the years. You know, I was just saying earlier that one of the big crazy sci-fi ideas of the original pilot was that there was the first officer was a woman. Whoa. Crazy.
Yeah.
You know, and then I, after we finished season one, somebody had mentioned that the majority of our cast and crew, of the Enterprise were female. And I looked around, I was like, oh, I hadn't even noticed that. So we've actually had to figure out ways of continuing to push the boundaries of inclusion and how we look at ourselves as a species and as a culture.
Mm. Well, that's what Star Trek's always done, right? It's always held the sort of prism of sci-fi in front of modern society.
Well, that's what a good TV show does in general. I think at its best, it can only operate as a metaphorical platform about where we are. Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking of The West Wing specifically.
My favorite TV show of all time.
It was so successful. Yeah. It was about our nation as it exists outside of the TV show, but done in a safe, metaphorical, funny way that we could all participate in and not feel threatened by, right? We need that show back.
Oh, God, we absolutely
really need
do.
That show back. Please, for the love of God.
But that was a show that did almost something similar to Star Trek, right? It showed you the best possible versions of who we could be. Like the American government, if it was this, everything would be fine in the world. And with Star Trek, if this is the future, I think everything will be fine.
If they do it, it should be, I'm telling you, if they do the West Wing again, it should be a Republican administration, and they should just be boring bureaucrats.
No crimes at all.
They just get shit done.
Well, that was the idea in season 7, that Alan Alda's character was supposed to win the election. And then John Spencer obviously, unfortunately, died. And
that's right.
They repitched. So they thought, well, we can't have him lose his running mate and then lose the election. So
that's
Santos
right.
won.
Yeah.
But that would have been an interesting way to continue that story. But it does feel like if you look at that then, it feels like almost a very naive look at what politics is. Because you go now in an era where stuff like Veep was deemed too close to, it cut too close to the bone. Like it's become a circus, hasn't it? So it's gone a little bit beyond that. But yeah, hopefully we can bring it all back, calm it down. Bring back the West Wing. I think that would be the way forward for all of us. Last question that I did want to ask you, which is this, is that every Star Trek has a villain. You know, Romulans for Next Gen. We've had Klingons for the original series. It feels like for Strange New Worlds, the Gorn are the villain. Excellent choice. Because obviously the arena is, what, the most well-known episode of the original series, I would
say? Right, yeah.
I mean, what did you think of that as the nemesis for the show?
Well, when the writers first told me that the Gorn were going to be the nemesis, I said, of course, that is such a brilliant idea in so many ways. Number one, it conjures this sense of mischief in the fans, the Gorn does. It's such a high bar technically to do the Gorn that not a lot of people have wanted to tackle it. And but then you look at a canon literature and they're everywhere. I mean, they're all over the Beta Quadrant apparently. And so, to pick up that mantle and try to do it with today's technology was, it just makes all the sense in the world. And I'm really glad that we did it.
And they come across as properly formidable as well. I love the fact that you have the baby Gorn are absolutely deadly. We've not even seen an adult Gorn yet. So amazing
coming.
Stuff. Yeah, coming soon. Coming soon. Cannot wait. Anson, thank you very much for your time. It has been much appreciated.
Thanks.
Right, that was Anson Mount. Let's move on to this week's reviews. And this week we have Can Confidential on Acorn. Now, this is a classic procedural. Yes, an actual procedural. Not just episodic, an actual procedural in which a gutsy Khan detective called Lieutenant Camille Delmas teams up with a suave con man called Harry King to solve crimes and potentially right an injustice. Oh, and they're both hot and they bicker all the time in a kind of simmering pot of sensual tension. But it's all good. It's all good. It is a procedural. It's maybe not the most peak TV thing in the world, but it's fine because Harry King is played by none other than the CAG himself, Jamie Bamber. So, Kay, Battlestar Galactica fan that you are, were you properly excited to see the CAG on screen? And confidentially, can you recommend it?
Oh, gosh, James, that's a lot to unpack right there. I obviously don't know. I haven't seen Jamie in the show, but in that show. I'm surprised you let us or wanted us to review this, James, is the
truth.
Everything
else was embargoed.
Yeah. So the fact that you were so excited for us to review this was surprising.
I mean, excited is a stretch.
Well, you've kind of summarized the plot. I think the first episode does a good job of, like, you know, it sets up all the characters and the general premise and the dynamics as, like, Camille, played by Lucy Lucas, tries to hunt down the killer of Vince, who is, like, thought to be a famous anonymous artist in the style of Banksy. And to me, when I was watching this, I just had, like, it felt like a mashup of a few different shows. So Riviera, do you remember Riviera?
Yeah.
Yes.
With Julia Stiles. It has an element of Wacky Races because they go on this really, like, loads of car chases, bike chases, stuff like that, and a touch of Sunset Beach. And yeah, I just think it was knowingly cheesy and hammy and carries on regardless. I wouldn't say I'm going to watch any more of this, but I would emphasize James's point that this isn't premium quality TV, but is entertaining nonetheless.
Well, you're too young, but it reminded me of The Persuaders, right, which was a show that went out in 1971 when I was only four. But it must have carried on. It carried on until for a couple of years. And I remember one of my earliest viewing experiences. But The Persuaders starred Tony Curtis and Roger Moore, right, as, like, kind of gentlemen. I don't know what they were, really, con men or something. But there was a lot of, like, French Riviera style, you know, action, and it was kind of filmed in glamorous locations like this. So it reminded me of that. But I agree with the ones you mentioned as well. But the funny thing about this show is, it's something, like, brilliantly stilted about the whole thing, and it's partly because the French characters, who are played by French actors and actresses, like the two lead French actresses, speaking like a cod English.
Yeah,
kind of.
Exclusively speaking in English.
Exclusively speaking in English.
Yeah, but to each other.
With
so
a French
weird,
accent.
Yeah.
With a heavy French accent. And that's just weird. And then your mate, James's mate, comes along from Battlestar Galactica, kind of being very English. And the way we know he's being so English, he keeps calling him Lieutenant all the time.
Yes,
and
he calls her
Lieutenant about 5,000 times, in case we've forgotten what she does or who she is or that he's English. And it's just really, but it just amused me just how kind of, and the dialogue, I mean, don't stand too close to the flame, you'll get burned. That was one brilliant bit. Oh, I was like, yeah, if you stand too close, we know why you're not going to stand too close to the flame, because you'll get burned. You don't need to, you get burned bit.
Does this not feel like that's the bit where, you know, you'd be like, Horatio Caine would, like, pull off his sunglasses and the Who would be like, wow, you know, it's like the CSI, where it always used to be like a pun. Let's take him to the bank, to the blood bank. And then it would, like, cut to the credits.
Yeah. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. It uses cliches, like, as if they're actual genius bits of dialogue. It's so reliant on cliches. It's amazing. But the funnier than all of that, and this whole thing did amuse me very much, is that it's a whodunit, right? It's literally a procedural, James's least favorite genre. But the whodunit, the mystery, is the death of this graffiti artist, basically. There are literally, like, two, maybe three maximum suspects. And
it's
it turns
so
out to be one of those. It's the least interesting mystery.
It's a no-brainer.
Oh my God, it's a no-brainer. And I thought that was so funny. They couldn't be bothered. I mean, they have to introduce the characters, but they couldn't be bothered to come up with more than, like, two suspects for this crime. It's so funny. It is absolutely shockingly terrible, but in quite a fun way.
I just think Jamie Bamber's character as well is so camp, like, you know, knowingly camp and, like,
but everyone's kind of a bit, it's like everyone struts through it, like the graffiti artist gallerist woman, she's hilarious and a lavish. Everyone is, like, ridiculous. It is
oh,
funny.
Gosh.
Oh, it's very much a case of, hi, the 1980s called and they want their show back. I don't know how this exists. I mean, I kind of understand why it's on Acorn, which is a channel that I would say I've never heard of, but I'm actually pretty sure we reviewed at least one Acorn thing in the past. I don't know how you watch it. I don't know where it exists, but apparently it's a thing. I don't know. From small acorns grow mighty trees, perhaps, but this isn't one of them. No, it's not for me. On any level, or I would argue for anyone else, because if you like procedurals, there are many, many better ones out there. But let's face it,
the only reason you even vaguely, apart from the fact that everything else was embargoed, which is true.
It was.
I knew you would probably, because I did give you a couple of other options, if you remember. But you, of course you picked this because of Jamie Bamber's in Battlestar Galactica, and it's totally backfired on you.
Yeah, see, this is my elite sci-fi coming to the fore again. I was hoodwinked by the CAG. CAG Confidential comes to Acorn, whatever the fuck that is.
I'm sure they'll be delighted. They sent us the screeners that I asked for, and this is the thanks they get.
I apologize, Acorn. Acorn TV,
which is a lovely streaming service full of interesting, fun crime sagas and stuff. It arrives there today, Monday, 26th of June.
Come on, how do people get Acorn? Where do you find Acorn?
You'll find it on, it'll be an option. It's like an app, they have their own app on Sky. Or you'll find it on Prime Video somewhere. So it's like its own little streaming service.
Good. Screaming service, yes. Okay, good. Right. Next up, we have Champion on BBC One, which you've already heard about, I think, hopefully, possibly, from Candace Carty-Williams herself, who I'm sure gave you a perfectly good synopsis when you were listening to that interview, which hasn't happened yet. I am going to ask Kay to talk about this one as well, because obviously Boyd has done the interview and therefore is compromised.
James's weird rules. Yeah, so this is an 8-part musical drama. And as Candice no doubt said, she was commissioned to do this from scratch. They wanted to do a drama set in South London, about the UK black music scene, particularly the rap scene. And I really, really enjoyed this because the whole story revolves around the Champion family, and in particular, the siblings, Bosco, played by Malcolm Camuletti, who's in Top Boy, and Vita, played by newcomer Deja J. Bowens, who are basically become rivals. Bosco's been in prison. He is already established as a sort of semi-famous rap artist. He comes out of prison and he's trying to kind of reclaim his crown. And what we learned very quickly is that he's got anxiety issues. He doesn't write his lyrics himself. His sister does that. Vita does it. And what we see is there's a growing tension between them, because Vita is getting frustrated about the fact that she doesn't get any kind of credit for what she does. She's essentially his PA manager, dog's body, their mum, played by Nadine Marshall, who's fantastic in Save Me. She wants the daughter just to look after her son, and gives her very little opportunity to grow. And eventually Vita has enough and she decides to go out on her own, because she's a good singer and she's a good lyricist. And this is about the rivalry, but it's about so much more, because they cover so much: male mental health, racism, police harassment. It's just so, what I love about this, other than I really, really like the music, which is all original tracks. Ray BLK is a character in this. She's a singer-songwriter, but she acts in this as Vita's best friend, Honey. And she also serves as a music executive. And so I love all the original music, but the thing I love most about it is just that it just feels so real and authentic. It doesn't feel like you're watching actors. You just feel like you're watching a family that is being, you know, that they have these dynamics that everyone does, you know, like rivalry between siblings, favoritism, and also obviously the struggles that they suffer, you know, that they kind of encounter being harassed by the police and stuff like that. I just thought everything about this reeks authenticity, and I just really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah, it's I think Candice Carty-Williams has just done a brilliant job. This is, you know, this is a tough to create a story set in the music industry, which is a hard, you know, to get those details right and to make it feel real and not make it feel kind of cheesy and slightly over the top. You know, there's a scene where they go in to have a meeting with a music record company, and all these kind of ridiculous, pompous kind of white guys basically are trying to show how authentic they are. And that rang so true. It was brilliant. But also, it's looking at a lot of different, you know, it's kind of with this very gripping storyline of this sibling rivalry. that work, that by the end of the first episode, you're completely swept up in it because you really feel for her, particularly the sister character, that she's being, not only is she kind of treated really unfairly by her brother, but her mum, their mum, also sides with him all the time, which, for, you know, for no good reason. And that feels is really painful for her. And all of that ends up being completely gripping. But you've then got these scenes like, as you mentioned, as Kay mentioned, the when the police arrive, when they're having like his birthday party. And that is so sudden and shocking and filmed so brilliantly that you're completely taken aback. And of course, and that as a dramatization of the fact that Black people are treated differently by the police, particularly I think by the Metropolitan Police in London. We don't have to go into that whole recent instance involving the Met, but that was so powerfully done. I thought it was brilliant, directed by John Ogunmuyiwa. He brilliantly handled the first this episode, I thought. And he's like, this is his first TV stuff that he's directed. He's directed some short films before, but I just thought he handled all of the different elements of it really well. It's just a really gripping, fascinating drama, and it's really impressive.
It is, yeah. That sequence where you talk about the police breaking the party is very shocking for just the injustice of it. Like, it makes you furious watching it, the way they're treated. I thought, exactly, I think Kay's right, the authenticity is definitely the word here. It felt very, very believable. I also think it does something very clever and also very difficult, which is it's all about show, don't tell. Like, if you're going to have an up-and-coming rapper who's amazing stuff, you're going to have to show him rapping. Like, and it has to be good enough to make it believable that he's successful. And obviously, that's really fucking difficult. And I think, you know, fair play to her that she really, really pulls that off. Like, you totally believe. You think, actually, do you know what? He comes across as very talented. You can see how he could be a breakout artist. And they show you extended musical sequences. Now, when this was obviously described as a musical show, you know, I thought it'd be people coming, here I am coming down to make breakfast, la, 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 la. You know, I thought, I was like, what is this that you've made me watch? And I was like, oh, it's not that at all. Like, no. It's a, you know, it's a drama, but it has extended musical sequences because he's a performer. And he performs, and so does she. And I really like that from the very first scene, you get that sense that his sister, who I won't say is necessarily the real talent, except she clearly is the Noel to his Liam, and his sister gets completely marginalized, completely ignored. He takes her for granted and obviously uses her talent. And then the mother, who we witness, always takes his side in all of this. Like, she's very much like, she's not particularly supportive of his sister, even though she is talented in her own right. So yeah, it's very compelling, lots of great human drama, and it's got great musical stuff in it as well. So yes, I rather enjoyed this, despite the lack of elite science fiction.
Spoiler alert, this is my pick of the week.
Oh, well, that is a spoiler. That's ruined.
Okay, you just ruined the last. I know you will.
Procedure to the wind, you know, yeah, whatever.
I mean, I will forgive it because you're on death's door, at death's door, yeah. Whatever the phrase is.
Only because I really, really like it. Just feels really fresh.
It's not
and
that
exciting.
Big. I thought you were going to say this is my pick of the year. I mean, that would be.
Oh,
you
know. No.
Look, Boydie, in a year where Foundation came out, I don't think we can really say.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
Anyway, that is Champion, which airs on BBC One when?
Saturday. BBC One Saturday evening, 9:15 p.m. A great slot.
Great stuff. Finally this week, we have Hijack on Apple TV Plus, which sees Idris Elba as a man trying to get home to see his wife, only for his flight from Dubai to London to be hijacked and for the 7-hour journey to play out in real time. Boydie, please review this one in real time over the course of 7 hours, starting now.
No one needs to hear that. I'll do it in 7 minutes. This is a absolute joyride. I alluded to, as listeners of the podcast will know, the last couple of weeks. I mean, I've been so looking forward to this. I love aeroplane set films, TV shows, etc. From Airport, the Airport series, Airplane, the spoof, Red Eye, all of them. I love them all. There's something inherently dramatic and exciting, I think, about boarding a plane, the possibilities, you know, that affords. Who are you going to sit next to? You know, are you going to be able to fit all your stuff in the overhead locker? Will the plane be all right? Will it crash? You know, all of this stuff.
Go through your head?
Yeah, what the stewards and stewardesses
who are you
be
going
like?
To be? I love this is a very boy thing. Who am I going to be sitting next to in my first class seat?
Well,
will it be someone famous?
Well, not even that with his private jet.
That's a good that's a good point though, because in your first or business class seat, because of course,
oh god,
Idris Elba's character Sam gets sat next to an infuriating bellend of a, like, this kind of like Tory boy figure who's a complete twat. And that does affect things that he is sat next to. And that's, so for example, that's that immediately you're thrust into this annoyingness. He has to sit next to this complete doofus. I thought that was really funny. But the whole idea is brilliant, of having seven episodes, each covering roughly, I mean, they cheat a bit, you know, there's a bit, but covering roughly an hour in the story. And it isn't just set on the plane. So there is the plane with about 220 passengers on board, which is quite claustrophobic. And you meet a handful of the passengers, and there's a gang of like five hijackers who seem to be British, and you're not really sure. You have no idea what their motive is, led by Neil Maskell, the brilliant Neil Maskell of Utopia fame, who's very scary and horrible. And you also get to see what's happening on the ground. You get to see the air traffic control person led by Eve Miles. You get to see the politicians and the counterterrorism people dealing when this starts getting really serious and they're threatening to kill the passengers. So it does cross-cut between all these different things, but the core of the action is still on board the plane. And Idris Elba's character is this, he's basically a negotiator for businesses. But and you kind of keep thinking, oh, he's going to end up being that he's really a CIA agent or something, you know, as kind of Superman figure, like a Bourne identity. But he's not, he's just literally a negotiator for businesses. But he's so cool and calm and has so many brilliant ideas, psychological ideas of how to deal with and manipulate the situation, that it's a brilliant role for him, I have to say. Like, you know, the Luther film that was on Netflix earlier this year came in for quite a lot of criticism, and it wasn't it just his finest hour, let's say. But this is a proper great role for him. He's so cool. Immediately, the first time you see him on the travelator at the airport, he's like just kind of stoical, and the way he tries to work with the passengers and the hijackers and deal with the situation is just fascinating. I thought it was massively entertaining, gripping. I binged through the whole lot. Annoyingly, of course, Apple TV Plus do not make all episodes available, I'm afraid, listeners. So the first two go out on Wednesday, but then you have to wait for the rest week by week. But I've seen the whole 7 hours of it, and I loved it.
Oh, you show off.
No, I just have to say that's how addictive it was. I couldn't stop watching it. So I thought it was an absolute blast.
How is it that I'm the one who gets singled out for being a massive twat in these reviews and not you for saying things like that?
I sounded the twat klaxon when you talked about going first class. Mm.
That is true. Yeah. My first class story is the first time I flew business, which is to go on the set of Joss Whedon's Serenity movie. Someone jostled my seat as they were putting stuff in their overhead locker when they sat next to me. And I was like, oh, tutting. And it was Patrick Stewart.
Oh my! And also, of course, you were tutting.
Yeah. I tutted internally. I did not tut externally because I was very excited to be in business class. I'd never been there before.
Sir Patrick Stewart. That's a boast.
I was, yeah.
A quick jostle, exciting. You and Patrick.
A quick jostle with Patrick Stewart at the you know, however many thousand feet. Yes, all right. Well, enough about Patrick Stewart. I know exactly what you mean. So Boydie, as he shared on this podcast a few weeks ago, had started watching this early. And it is incredibly addictive. Like from the first episode, when I put this on, I absolutely could not stop watching it. Like it's absolutely compulsive viewing. Partly the real time, I think, format lends itself to that. But they do it, and it shows how far we've come from 24. Because like you'll recall that the biggest problem 24 had was they had this great idea for a real-time show and then realized the execution is nowhere near as exciting. Because by definition, if Kiefer Sutherland needs to drive somewhere, you've got 20 minutes where you've now got to go somewhere else to see something else happening while he drives from A to B, right? And so you ended up with these awful, awful, awful plot filler, sort of like C, D, E, F to Z plots, just designed to burn time. So you get Kim and the fucking cougar. You get Terry losing her memory. You get these dreadful, dreadful things because they just couldn't think of anything else to happen when you have to be away from the action. And I think what this show does, it helps that it's a really contained space in this, that it all happens on a plane. So obviously, he doesn't have to drive anywhere. He just walks into, you know, economy. But they have really good drama on the ground. You've got the kind of Dubai air traffic controller and his investigations. Like the air traffic controller in the UK, which is genius because you start with her doing the juggle, like trying to sort out the school run. She's late for work. You don't even know who she is. And she's like coming up with excuses for her boss. And even that's really compelling. And then when she comes in, she's a major player in the plot. You've got Max Beasley, who's kind of like he's a police officer, but he's the boyfriend of Idris Elba's estranged wife. So you have all these different people on the ground who all have interesting drama to bring to this. And then you keep cutting back to the plane and they have enough different people doing enough different things on the plane that that's always intriguing as well. Plus, I just think it's exactly as Boyd said, it's a brilliant twist on that Passenger 57 thing where, oh no, they've hijacked a plane, but did they know who was sitting in seat 8F? You know, it's like this guy who's, but it's not, it's just a guy who negotiates with bellends for a living and is a master of psychological manipulation because that's his literal job. And he deploys it to excellent effect. And it's a nice kind of like subversion because Idris Elba, who is frankly a unit, you know, you would think he's physically imposing, but that's not what this show is about. It's all about sort of like, it's all much more cerebral than that. But it's, yeah, it's so much fun. I defy anyone not to want to watch all of these in one go. And all I can do is apologize that you're unable to because Apple will drop it week by week, but it is definitely worth sticking with.
And it's great. Say it's brilliantly handled, but it's created by George Kay and Jim Field Smith, who worked together on Criminal on Netflix, and George works on Lupin. They're both of them put together so brilliantly. They're like a well-oiled machine, their shows, and they do work so well. And this is a fantastic example of just a properly tense, taut, wonderfully entertaining thriller.
Yeah, which stars also Roshenda Sandal, who shouts at people quite a lot. So,
yeah, okay,
and really if you listen to Pilot Plus, you will understand why that is relevant. But yes, lots of fun then. Hijack, which comes to Apple TV Plus on, I'm going to say Friday.
No, it's Wednesday.
Damn it!
Yeah.
Okay, Wednesday then on Apple TV Plus.
Correct.
And that is Hijack. And that is, the one other thing I will share with you, Boydie. I'll give you £1,000 of Kay's money if you can name who sings the theme tune to this show.
To Hijack?
Yes.
Oh my God. I don't know.
It really threw me because it's an album that I had in the 90s. And that particular song is Lonely Soul by Uncle featuring Richard Ashcroft. So,
oh, do you know what? I should have thought about that more. Yeah, it's a brilliant song.
I recognize that without having to Shazam it. I was like, oh, I know this.
Fantastic. There
you
go.
That's an extra fact. That's the kind of stuff you get from this elite sci-fi podcast. Mm. Right. Okay, fine. That's it. We're done. What else is out this week, Boydie?
Oh, quickly. Riches, which is on ITVX at Christmas, arrives on ITV1 on Friday, the 30th at 9 o'clock. This is the show about Black British family with a kind of beauty business, and it's very compelling and entertaining. Before We Die, which started where we did the interview with Paddy Gibson, that's actually started yesterday, Sunday, as this goes out, but carries on each weeknight until Wednesday. The Witcher, as before mentioned, arrives on Netflix on Thursday, by the way, Thursday, not Friday.
Which will be reviewing on Pilot TV Plus.
Jack Ryan arrives on Friday on Prime Video.
Which will also be reviewing on Pilot TV Plus.
We Hunt Together, which has been on UK TV Alibi, that arrives on BBC One on Monday. There's an interesting documentary about Kanye called The Trouble with Kanye, BBC Two Wednesday, that I nearly forced us to watch.
James wouldn't let us watch.
Yeah. And that is it.
Exciting. Right. That is it then for this week's show. If you enjoyed it, please do head over to the podcast platform of your choice and leave us a 5 ceiling roller rating. What else we got? Yes, please follow us on social media at James C. Dyer, at Kay Ribeiro, at Boyd Hilton. Please do book your tickets for the live show and please do subscribe to Pilot Plus. We very much appreciate your help in keeping us around. On next week's show, we'll be reviewing some TV shows. They may or may not be elite sci-fi. I haven't decided yet. But we will have some people from The Witcher on as guests. Wendell Pierce from Jack Ryan's going to be on as well. So we're going to have some exciting guests on here too. So we will hear from you all then. Boydie, go and speak to Candice or not. We'll see what happens. It's very exciting.
Yes. Pick of the week is...
Pick of the week! Well, you know what Case is.
Well, we know what Case is, but she hasn't seen Hijack, but Champion is really good, but so is Hijack.
Yes. Hijack is my pick of the week.
Okay.
And my pick of several weeks, actually. It's really, really good.
Yeah. Same.
So, excellent.
Okay, bye.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Pilot out.